Hello everybody, and welcome to episode 286 of the 9 Years podcast. I am Nick Draper. I am joined, as always, by the face of the BBC Sport website, Mr. Stuart Deakins. Well, it's Groundhog Day again. Fourth season in a row, Stu, that we have sacked our manager and replaced him with a view to keeping or preserving our League One status. So yes, listeners, we are going to be talking, of course, about the departure of Mark Robinson and the instalment of Mark Bowen as interim manager until the end of the season. We'll look ahead to Sheffield Wednesday on the weekend, Charlton the following Tuesday, and briefly look back at Robbo's final game in charge, the 1-0 home defeat to Cambridge United. But Stu, I think, there's many places this conversation will go this evening, or sorry, whatever time of day you're listening, morning, afternoon, whatever it might be. I want to avoid a cliche, but I couldn't think how to. So I feel like this is a bit of a watershed moment for the football club, what's happened this week. I think when you so heavily invest in a long-term process, long-term plans with your coaching team and how you want to go about your playing staff and developing the first team squad, when you then turn around and, well, eliminate the key part of that process and replace that person, I think that says that suggests to me that whatever was planned is no longer being planned, and we're going to look at a different way of doing things again. Is that fair, or is it too early to make that call? Are we still perhaps looking for a long-term process just with a different person at the helm?
Yeah, it's a difficult one to answer at the moment. I think what we're probably doing as a club is, you know, we've got 7 games left at the end of the season, I think, and what we obviously need the investment now is to really give every possible chance of us staying in League One. I think most years it's really important to stay in League One, and we say it probably every season that, you know, don't get relegated. But, you know, if you think about in terms of financially, I'm very much about the cost of living going up, you know, with energy and food and petrol and stuff like that. I think, you know, we're not money rich anyway, are we? So we don't really want to be dropping out of this league. I think the decision that's been made has shown very clearly that we want to stay in this division. But we need to really review what we've done, you know, what happened for the whole season in the summer. Because we have gone out, we've gone against our long-term strategy. It feels like, we don't know that for certain. But when you haven't got lots of money, what you don't want to be doing is going and change your strategy all the time, because ultimately that costs money. You know, if we go in against the strategy, then it could mean that we need a lot of investment, or, you know, people moving around in the squad in the summer. And the idea of us having a long-term strategy with our academy and stuff like that, so we didn't have that during the summer, but we could well have that again. We don't know yet, but I think it's more of a case, like I say, get the 7 games out of the way, just try and stay in League One, and then just still wash up in the summer and learn from our mistakes, which are aplenty again this season.
there has been many mistakes, many questionable things along the way. I mean, we will come on let's just quickly get this out of the way. So Mark Bowen has come in, assisted by Eddie Nitsietski. Eddie Alphabet, I think he was called in his playing days, although that was before my time. And I mean, we're really impressed that somebody of that experience and stature, and somebody without an obvious, well, there must be a link somewhere with somebody at the football club, but he's not got a history with Wimbledon whatsoever. So that was a surprise. I think it's a pleasant surprise. I was worried that when someone came in, it was going to be someone that would have that link, and we'd be sort of stuck maybe doing the same things again. But no, I think on the face of it, I said we shouldn't let him go, shouldn't change what we have. Once we have, you get someone in, and it's a good appointment.
Yeah. I think it's a very, very good appointment. I think no matter what we think about what happened with Mark Robinson and stuff like that, I think, you know, whenever you get whenever you dismiss a manager or you change manager or head coach, the idea is to bring someone in that's better. There's no point otherwise. I don't think any of us can argue. I was really, you know, Mark Burry and I, unfortunately, I'm at an age where I remember him playing for Norwich against us. So you worry when you remember seeing them as a player, and then you're told they're like, what is he, 58? And you're like, wow, that's old. But if you look at his coaching career, 500 games as a coach, he's followed Mark Hughes everywhere, apart from Bradford.
You know, can't really blame him for that one.
No, I suppose there's some limits you don't go to, but you know, if you look at him, Southampton, Man City, Blackburn, Reading, it's an impressive. So I think the club have done really, really well to do that. And obviously, Eddie Nesweski, or whatever his name is, Eddie Alphabet, a heavy coaching career. He finished his career at 28 at Chelsea. And has got a serious... So, but also, you know, what tends to happen with... they stay around in pairs, don't they? So they've worked together. So obviously they know each other really well. So it's not as if you've got two new people coming in. They are very much a team. And like I say, the club deserve a lot of credit. And it's really impressive. And I said to you before we start recording, I feel quite rejuvenated at the moment. I'm really now starting to look forward to Sheffield Wednesday. Because, you know, let's be honest, we under Robbo, it was going to be tough to break that run. Whereas now you've got somebody who's not got that run, basically starts with a clean slate as such. And it's got, you know, he's got a minus one handicap in terms of points, and he's got seven games to prove, you know, his worth.
I mean, you say a clean slate, but it's going to be it's a hell of a job with the mindset of the players, as we saw on Saturday. As soon as we go 1-0 down, and we spoke about it on the post-match show on YouTube, so we won't go into great detail, but the mentality has just gone, isn't it? When you've gone so long without winning, and then you take another blow going 1-0 down, after what I thought was an encouraging, I mean, I'm not saying it was a fantastic first half, but it was encouraging. I thought we were a better team. Don't think Cambridge threatened us. But you saw the players and just fragile, weak, shattered, whatever word you want to use for them for mentally. It's a clean slate for the management team, but the players have really got to be robust now and resilient, because away at Sheffield Wednesday, if you go 1-0 down, which is likely, let's be honest, it's now thinking, how do they react to that? How do you instill that belief in them?
Yeah, I agree. I think it was really important to have somebody come in that's not been part of the first team set up this season. No disrespect to Darius. Darius was a choice to come in and steady the ship. But realistically, we knew we couldn't go with Darius, because it's the same voice. You know, to say Darius has not been involved in the dressing room and coaching, it's the same voice. And, you know, it's a fragile squad. It's a young squad. But the fact we got some fresh faces in, and from what I'm on, you know, they're very serious, not to give too much away, but there's certain restrictions within the training ground and what they want and what they expect. They've come in and they're serious. You know, it's difficult, isn't it? Because you don't want to say they're professional, because that's discrediting what we've had before, but they've obviously been at a Premier League level. So there's probably certain standards that they expect, and they're going to want that from the players. So it's probably going to be a bit of a sort of a building up confidence, but If you look at a lot of the stuff that Mark Bowen's been involved in, a lot of stuff that he's got involved in has gone very much on a defensive shape. So seven games in, do you go to a team we've got to be difficult to beat, or do you go, what we've got to be a bit better? Because ultimately, I don't know whether we can survive with draws. So it's one of those, isn't it? But from a point of view, we are not good defensively, and you're right. You know, if you look on Saturday against Cambridge, the moment we concede the first goal, we're gone. We're gone. Yeah. It's like seeing a boxing match, isn't it? And someone getting punched on the chin, and all of a sudden their legs are just wobbly all the time, and they're frightened of that next punch because they're thinking we're gone here. And that's the thing. So I think Sheffield Wednesday, hey, look. Two training sessions? He'd have had today, wouldn't he? Would that be right? He'd had yesterday, I can't think now.
I'm not sure. Well, he announced. So Mark Robinson, his departure was announced on Monday. Darius Charles was announced as taking interim charge of first team affairs on Tuesday. Mark Bowen was announced as interim manager on Wednesday. I think he likely only had Thursday with the squad really to train, because it all depends on what the, and we don't, I don't know if you know, I don't know what their arrangements are for travelling up to Sheffield this weekend. Are they going to go up early on Friday and train somewhere locally? Just don't know.
Yeah, I think that's what they probably will do, because Sheffield's quite a decent route train-wise, isn't it? So I would have thought that's already been arranged. Or if not, you know, Mark Bowen's going to have many contacts, isn't he, around that way. So I think, you know, for the Sheffield Wednesday game, it's probably going in and just motivating them. The problem we've got is you go into Tuesday against Charlton, so you haven't got an awful lot of time, have you? So it's probably going to be going in and really trying to build that confidence up, giving them a little bit of structure. But I strongly always believe that a new voice is really, really good, and he's got a lot of experience with that, hasn't he? So, hey, look, I'm quite buzzing at the moment, because I think we've given ourselves the best possible opportunity to stay up, and that's nothing disrespectful with Robbo, but as a foot, you know, we're all football fans, got to move on with the club, and got to get behind the club.
I'm not buzzing. It's nothing to do with Mark Bowen, but we'll come on to that in a moment. You're right, Charlton comes up very quickly, actually, after Sheffield Wednesday, but we always thought, and we always looked at that game against a team that aren't, Charlton haven't been great this season, probably just doing enough to keep their heads above water, and maybe they wouldn't particularly fancy it. And I still think that's looking like the case. Why am I not buzzing at the moment, Stu? Well, let's get into it. So the statement that was released on the 23rd of March, in which both boards, PLC and Don's Trust, backed Mark Robinson. Stu, this is a work of art, and it needs to be printed off and framed and hung in the museum at the stadium as part of our history, because I don't think I've ever seen a statement age so poorly so quickly. And there are certain things within it that I think, and maybe these things will come out over time. I'm doubtful, but I'm not going to let it rest, because I think there are still questions over the way Glyn Hodges left that we've never had answered and we need to have addressed as well. But some of this stuff, I mean, really, what happened in 5 days that suddenly made such a change in our approach? We were so steadfast that this was what we were doing and this is how we had to go forward, because despite proclamations that we'll be in a strongest, I mean, at one point this statement says in our strongest ever financial position, I'm like, okay, still quite a lot in debt, all right, but despite that, that's why we're going to go ahead with the plan that we had in place with Mark Robinson in charge of it. And a statement that also basically took the blame completely away from the manager. Or, I mean, completely. It says that it gave him an uncompetitive playing budget. It says that the board needed to do more to support him. 5 days later, cheerio, see you later. It makes no sense to me.
Yeah, no, you're right. And do you know what? It was like, can I phrase this? It was like the statement was some sort of counselling session where, do you know what, you go into a counselling session and you lay all your problems on your table. We did that.
Yeah.
We literally went and we accepted responsibility, which is fine, you know. It was weird because, you know, there was talk around some people going, well, this is the dreaded vote of confidence. And I was like, I can't believe that's anywhere near the vote of confidence, because this is in effectively saying that we've not given you enough tools, we've not given you enough support, we've not recruited correctly. And actually, do you know what? We don't believe it's your necessarily all. Don't get me wrong, Robbo was the coach, head coach. Results are down to him.
But we're not absolving completely of blame.
But it didn't suggest to me that we would fall apart from that in 5 days. And I think, you know, look, we all make mistakes. I think the Don's Trust board have got to learn heavily from what they've done. They've done two things in 3 weeks. They've done that video with Xavier Wiggins, Chris Stewart, and Mark Robinson, looking like he's a hostage in between them. And to me, it was bullish. It was bullish. It was going, you know, as Ab was saying about, well, you know, we're getting asked how we do it and how are we so good at what we do? Okay. Talking about money, talking about, it was very bullish, and I felt it misjudged the room, if I'm being honest with you. And then we do the similar thing in a statement. It's a very bullish, best financial position. That doesn't add up to me. Bearing in mind, as I've said to you before, we're going into a heavy recession where everyone's...
Well, a financial crisis.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a cost of living crisis.
Yeah. But it's going to mean that there's not as much money going around. Everyone's got to, you know, everyone's got to literally tie up their spending, so we might not get people saying, you know. And I think, hey, look, the only thing that's changed is the reaction to the fan, the reaction from the fans on Saturday after Cambridge. That's the only change that we can physically see. And I was a bit, do you know what, look, I was a bit disappointed in it, if I'm being honest with you. Yes, the performance wasn't great. But I think we just don't understand the situation. I look there, and maybe this is actually what Don Trust Board, I'm probably giving them answers to my questions. But when they booed the team so heavily, I was like, we're done. Because this team is so fragile, they're not going to want to come and play at Plough Lane next time. Because they've just, you know, and don't get me wrong, you pay your money, you do what you want to do. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I'm not saying you clap the team off, but it was all counterproductive. And I suppose if you get to a stage, they spoke on Sunday, they've probably gone, look, the fans are gone. We've done this, the fans are gone. That is probably what changed. But we've got to be careful. We've got to be careful to react, because we've changed a long-term plan, which has legs. We've got sellable assets in terms of players. Look at the sellable assets we've got. Downside more than what he went into the end of the first season at Robbo. What did he have? Piggott left on a free.
Yeah.
You know, so what do we want? You know, what do we, if it's on the pitch we want, and we don't want this long-term strategy, fine. We go with a short-term strategy and we do what we've always done. But I think, in my opinion, that's all that changed.
I mean, you say that we've done what we've always done. I'd make a wider point, which is we've done what every single other football club would do. And people kept on saying throughout, you know, Mark wouldn't have had the amount of time he'd been got at any other football club. And I thought, no, you're right. And actually, maybe we're actually saying now, do you know what? We are different. We are trust owned. We are owned by the fans. We've got a long-term plan in place. We're not going to get worried, or we're not going to be reactionary or anything like that. We are going to prove that actually we as a football club are different. I think when I started the podcast by saying watershed moment, I think I can't see how, I think that's gone now. I think that pretense has gone. I don't see anything. I've had this conversation many times on the podcast down the years. I don't really see anything that we do particularly differently than the other football club, to be honest with you. We have, everything is done for the bottom line. We talk about the growing commercialization of football, and we have every single stand sponsored. We have our toilets sponsored. We have things that every single other football club does. We arrange a kit deal where the players have to come out wearing tracksuits, which has really bugged me for years now. These things are just exactly as, and then we get in a process now of we struggle and we sack our manager 4 consecutive seasons. So I'm kind of asking, really, what when it's a watershed moment, I think this is the final, surely this is the last time now we even have a pretense of trying to do things differently. Because we are literally just doing everything exactly as any other single football club would do. And sorry, it goes back even further. Like I said to you, people talk about wanting to be sustainable. God love him. When we have our rows with George about this, and he says the need to be sustainable, we must be sustainable, we must be different. Well, we've not been sustainable for years, and people think, what are you talking about? Well, I make the argument, and again, people, please come on and disagree with me and put your points forward. Non-league, we got out of that by being unsustainable because we had financial assistance to signing players.
Yeah.
And then once we got into League One, we started taking money, much to the chagrin of people that have this pointed out to them. We took money from one pot and put it in another pot and left us short from the original pot, which has contributed to a problem that we're now in financially. So we have been doing things that every other football club does, living beyond our means, and perhaps we did grow too quickly, and perhaps we shouldn't call this the 9 years podcast and tribute of getting into the Football League in 9 years, because perhaps it was that maybe we've got away with it, but perhaps it was really risking us massively by doing it so quickly when the infrastructure wasn't in place. And the infrastructure still continues not to be in place, really, behind the scenes. I've gone on a big, long, windy road there. I do apologise. But basically, Stu, are we any different to any other football club in the Football League, with the exception of Milton Keynes, who aren't a proper fucking club?
No, we react the same. And if I'm being honest with you, sometimes our culture isn't great. A 48-page word statement to Robbo. Darius Charles got a better send-off for 30-odd hours. Glyn Hodges dismissed. Never, you know, when Iwadi was dismissed, he released a statement through the League Managers Association. Glyn didn't even do that. We've not heard one bit from Glyn.
Not heard one thing about him, no.
Which speaks volumes. We've done a statement. We've done some sort of piece on Thursday, but it's 3 days too late. So, yeah, we are just the same as any other club, but sometimes we have failings. I think my concern is when we bought Robbo in, we changed a hell of a lot. So we changed our playing style. We went from a bit more direct to playing lovely football. And the idea of this, if we remember, was that we made ourselves more attractive for loans coming in from other clubs. Robbo had done a lot in the summer going around the clubs. Now, you could argue that, look at the loans we got, weren't great. Well, the statement does say, in a way, we gave them an uncompetitive budget. So it doesn't really matter what work you do with the clubs in the summer. They will only give you players if you can give them the salary that they need, which is hence why we got the player, and no disrespect to Tony Blade or Thomas, and that's why we got these players that hadn't made a league debut. We got them because they're first year loans, which would normally go to a League Two club. We also changed how we looked at our academy. So our academy, instead of giving them a 2 year contract, we gave them a 2+1 year contract to give them that extra opportunity to produce, which then we got a contract from Abercell. We also put on Zanev. We've also done another new contract with Paul Kalambayi, Will Nightingale, all youth products. So this, when I've been disappointed that Robbo left, I'm disappointed because he changed things in the processes that we did. So are we now going away from that? Because if we are, we don't have the right team. If we're going to go long ball, good luck playing long ball in this team. Are we looking at the academy? Are we going to go now, actually, because we have to be patient with the academy. These players are kids, so we've got to be patient with them, but we've shown that we can't be patient. So is it the right approach now with the academy to give them 2+1 year contracts? You know, we had a half time, we had the under 18s who won the league this season. We've even had players from there. We had Bart, who's the lad, the 18-year-old, I've forgotten his name now.
Bartley.
Yeah. He played a youth game on the morning and then was on the bench in the afternoon.
He was.
You know, we've also sent loans out to clubs. We sent Cosgrave out to Dover. The idea was to keep him there all season. We brought him back, so we had no choice. We've got Bilo, we've got Jack Curry out, who are getting their season loans to come back next season to then form part of the first team squad. If we've changed our strategy, that's going to cost us money. We haven't got money to throw away. So this, you know, when people go, you know, you're too close to the club and, you know, we love Robbo. Hey, look, I've got a lot of time for Robbo. He's been 18 years at the club. But I also got behind what he was trying to do. And if we've just scrapped that because of a case that we don't want fans booing, then the club's never going to do what... It's no point in doing a long-term strategy because it will never follow it through.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point. That's the whole point. If we're just going to keep doing this year on year, as you say, we don't foresee our budget issues suddenly transforming overnight. I mean, we might be slightly better off next year if we stay in League One than we were this year, but it'll be slightly. We're not suddenly going to have a top 10, 12 budget or whatever it is. I mean, I do also think... when I talk about watching moments, it's dawned on me realizations have dawned on me all the time during the past well, it's been years for one of them, really, but every single day it gets stronger, and that is, at the end of the day, what anyone cares about when it comes to the football club is what happens on Saturday at 3 p.m. And when I say we're no different to anyone else, that's proven time after time after time. Everything else we talk about is rendered irrelevant because, really, I mean, irrelevant might be, it might sound harsh, but I mean, what I mean by that, and I had this little thing on social media the other day, what brings people to come to a football stadium on a Saturday? It's what happens on the pitch. Everything else is great and it adds to your experience and that's fantastic, but if the football wasn't there in the first place, you wouldn't be there, no matter what anyone says. I go because it's great, I have a laugh with mates, whatever it might be. I'm thinking, yeah, but you could do that. There's a reason you're choosing to do that inside a football stadium and paying 20 quid for the privilege. Mm. It's because of the football. So again, no different to any other club there.
I think, do you know what frustrates me a little bit is the uncompetitive budget really does frustrate me. Mm-hmm. Because I said to you many times, didn't I, you know, we're moving to Player Lane, which is a lovely, shiny, new stadium. And we're going to attract new fans. And the experience, I don't know about you, but I still get butterflies when I go in. I love going to Player Lane, love the experience. Mm-hmm. But my eyes deceive me when I see a shiny, brand new stadium, you know, not top of the art, but it's not far off it. And on the pitch, we are cutting corners. And that's your problem. So I think, you know, the fans are going, well, one second, we're still paying a lot of money. Don't go on, Power Lane's not cheap. Ticket prices are not cheap. But on the pitch, we're going, we're not performing. What, you know, this is not going to be a lovely League Two ground. It's not going to, you know, Chesterfield, we've done Chesterfield. That's a really nice ground in non-league, but it wasn't meant for non-league. So I suppose my argument is, why did we go with an uncompetitive budget? Because that's the first I've heard of it. You know, we're saying uncompetitive on what we normally have. So basically what we're saying is, our budget is normally shit, but it's actually even shitter.
Yeah.
That's what you're basically saying. And then also what we're hearing is that there's money available from the kitty from what we sold Oddie Palmer for, and we didn't use it. We didn't
use it. Do you
believe
that? We don't know, but this is the other point I'm coming on to when I talk about things that I've realised and stuff like that. We might as well be privately owned, to be honest with you, because we don't have any clue of these things. We don't. But at the end of the year, we're going to be asked to vote for people to make decisions at the club, or green light decisions at the club, as we'll come on to in a moment.
Yeah.
We're dealing with one arm tied behind my back. And I'm not saying we know every... Of course, we don't know every single government contract that's ever signed, and we still vote for our elected representatives every 5 years. But I'll tell you what we do also have. We do have a voting record for our MPs, which we don't have. I don't have a clue who on the PLC board is arguing in favour of what. I don't know who on the Don's Trust board is arguing in favour of anything like that. So when you say... And then I've got no idea in terms of our budget... Whose decision is, have we got that money from the Ollie Palmer sale? Whose decision is it that we keep some of it aside? Have we spunked it all already on getting Sam Cosgrove in, paying his agent, by the way, and also perhaps paying off Mark Robinson's contract, offering a salary to Mark Bowen?
We don't know this, do we? You know,
none of it.
I was joking to you, like, he probably spent a bit of while trying to negotiate his staying up bonus. But do you know what? I would.
We're not.
You know, we are... We, you know, the greatest story in football is what we, and Robbo, to be fair, was the one that created that because he believed that. But no one comes to us for cheap. No one comes to you and goes, oh, I love your story, I'll do it for you for a favour. No one does that.
Well, not someone that's not got any
agree. So Mark Bowen's going to come in and we've got two people. So we've dismissed one person and we bought two people in. Two lots of salaries on that sort of side of it. But, and the PLC is frustrating because I think... A lot of people are confused and thinking the Don's Trust board made this decision. They didn't.
Yeah.
The PLC made decision. And
but Nick the Don's Trust green lighted it.
They can veto it. So they can veto it. And so the PLC made the decision. That would come from Mick Buckley, who's an interim chair, who was also put on as an interim chair with the agreement of the Don's Trust board and the PLC in an agreement. Mm-hmm. And one of his big first decisions to come in is to dismiss Robert. It's a big decision to make that. The Don's Trust board have a majority.
Because there is an element of us making an assumption there. We don't know that for sure, and I think we have to be fair and point that out. I'm pretty sure that Mark was given the boot, but whether that was Mick Buckley and Mick Buckley's sole lease decision, I don't know.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because ultimately he's the interim chair, the CEO, yeah. And it's a footballing decision which would have been made by that. You're right. It may have been pushed and people would have pushed it in, and we've got Nick Robinson on there. We've got Ian McNay on there. We've also got a Don's Trust board there, but they can veto it. But if they veto a decision, it's technically saying we've got no confidence in the PLC, which is quite a big decision, isn't it? So then, unless something drastic is going to come on there, they're not going to veto it. Okay. But in terms of transparency, you're right. There's no PLC minutes for this year. There's none. So we can't even see what was discussed up. And don't get me wrong, I know we get loads of redacted stuff and stuff like that. But in terms of, you look at the Don's Trust board minutes and the PLC minutes now, because of the way it's changed now and the operating board is the PLC, the Don's Trust board minutes are actually quite boring, to be honest with you. I don't know if you've noticed, but they've actually reduced quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But there's no PLC minutes. And that's our operating board. And if we are a club that is owned by the Don's Trust board and the fans, we need to understand what's happening. And to not have any minutes for this year, that's crazy. That's crazy. So we can't even scrutinise what's happening.
And so therefore, we're no different to any other club at this moment,
then. No, and the reason now people are asking questions is because they're a bit annoyed. They're annoyed. You know, no one's saying that Robbo should have stayed, and we understand. I can understand why Robbo's.
I am staying.
Yeah, but I can get it from a football point of view, but ultimately, I'm now asking questions of, but there's no accountability. We can't even account. We can't even know. We don't even know who made the decision on the football club board to do whatever they did.
No, and the confusion extends to, as I had conversations on social media again earlier in the week about, as you said, it wasn't a Don's Trust board decision. It's ratified by them, whatever term you want to use. It's presented by the PLC board. And the senior leadership team, which is the new name for the football club board.
Hmm.
But the confusion is, you've said there, Stu, what was it, 6 weeks ago, the Robbo video with Xavier and Chris.
It was less than that. I think it was about 3 or 4 weeks ago, Nick. It wasn't.
It probably wasn't that long ago. Yeah. Yeah. But again, with two people, admittedly, they are also on the PLC board, which again confuses the life out of me, but they were presented as the co-chairs of the Don's Trust board. We're told that the Don's Trust board do not get involved in football decisions because they don't have the expertise for it. But then again, you look back to when Mark was appointed just over a year ago, and the statement that announces his appointment, it's Joe Palmer and Don's Trust co-chair Xavier Wiggins, who actually says in the quotes that he was sat on the panel when they were interviewing candidates. Yeah. It says to represent the membership, but he was on the panel. So are you involved in football decisions, or are you not involved in football decisions? It's a tough one to figure that one out.
I suppose all we want, and we elect the Don's Trust board to represent us, okay? On a new manifesto, so someone coming in new, their manifesto is what we judge them on, because we've got nothing else to judge them on. But those restanding, we need to be able to see what they've done in those 2 years. What have they achieved? What have they voted for? And there has to be accountability. So this is nothing, I know a lot of people on the Don's Trust board, and it's sometimes difficult.
It's really difficult because it's nothing personal or anything like that. It's trying to make it makes sense in my head, and I'm sure it's the same for you, make sense of our structure, make sense of what we're meant to be doing, and if we're making a good job of what we're trying to be doing.
Yeah. So this is where you try and say, it's not a personal thing, but I do know quite a lot of on them, but I need to know, I want to have some accountability. Because ultimately, if you felt Robbo was, deserved to be dismissed and we no longer believe in his strategy, well, why did we vote for it a year ago? What changed? And what are we going to do? Because we all invest money, whatever way we do and how much and how little, we all invest money into the club. And we want to really understand that our money is being used correctly. And there's a lot of things that I'm really frustrated in the football committee. We said early in the season that who's going to take responsibility if it goes wrong? Because they'd all queue up to take responsibility if it goes right. Of course you will. But it's all about, you know, and it's not about going, you're the fall guy, you're the person that needs to pay with your place or your job. It's just going, do you know what, who's accountable? Can we learn from it? Should we do it again next season? Where are we? Because we've got to keep learning, because I'm really worried that we'll go on a spiral. We've seen so many clubs go on spirals, and we've all seen it for our first hand. We can't buy a win. We can't buy a win. You know, so before you know it, you're in 20 games, 30 games, you go into League Two if you get relegated. Just because you start a season again doesn't mean it stops. We've seen clubs fall all the way through, and if we do that and we don't learn from our mistakes and we don't even know who's accountable, then we've got problems.
Yeah, I mean, I'd point out just at this juncture as well that, you know, that people involved in the football club and making decisions, we're all good people. Yeah. And no one's acting in bad faith or anything maliciously or so. I don't think there's any of that to be argued. It's just now we're at a situation, as we're saying to you, and to be fair, you and I have said this for many, many years as well. The people that are elected onto the Doms Trust Board doing it for free.
Yeah.
The workload and the stresses that come with that are insane. It's not something I would ever put myself through. So fair play to anyone that's willing to do it. But I still say, and I've said it for many times, is it the best way forward for us? And again, I'm not even saying, look, this is, we need to sell the club and we need to have full-time, but I'm not saying, but is there not a way we can build into the structure of governance someone in a full-time position? I love the analogy of the football club is a school, and the Don's Trust Board are the governors, who are total volunteers that oversee things, and they have meetings once a month or once every 6 weeks or whatever it is like that. But I think with the industry football has become, as much as I hate it, I think it's such a big ask for someone to be trying to. I made the analogy, you're putting the kids to bed at 8 and then you're up till 1 a.m. trying to read through a financial reports and make decisions or try and check governance for a multi-million pound business. I think it's hard. I think we need people in governance roles that are essentially full-time employees.
And that is the reason why it's so hard to have a go. Like, in a way, because we're fan owned, we know people. Don't get me wrong, you've got many fans who go to games on a Saturday, just go to football, wouldn't even know the Don's Trust Board person.
Oh, do you know what, Stuart, to be honest with you, I really wish I was one of those people actually.
I know. And you don't want to have a go or challenge them, and there's been a few things where people have admitted that they haven't read everything correctly. Now normally you go, well, your job is to do that. But is it? You know, they're human, they're putting their time in. They have meetings that go on, now their Zoom meetings can go on to midnight. I'm sure they've had a lot of ad hoc meetings over the last couple of weeks, because the club, it's a challenging time. Relegation is massive for us. You know, we're doing the Plough Lane bonds. We've got a responsibility to the people that have put money into that to make sure that if we get relegated, we can still honour the stuff we do there. You know, financially, we don't know where it's going. We're obviously still waiting for the Tracy Crouch thing to come in with independent regulation. But, you know, that could change the goalposts. But at the moment, we are looking at a fact that we have still got a ground that we still need to pay for, and we're not maximising it yet. We're still not maximising it. You know, and that's the problem. I don't see this ground being a 365-day stadium. It's not. We're just not using it for enough. And then when we were at, you know, it's very difficult. And I think it's very difficult to have a go at people that I know have got the best intentions. They want to do the stuff. But if we're honest with you, the last couple of Don's Trust boards have all been reactive. You could look at their manifestos and you could pick holes through and go, have you done that? No. Have you done that? No. They haven't done it because they don't want to do it. They've done it because they've had to react to other stuff. The ticket fiasco, which we're still waiting for it to come out.
Yeah.
You know, how long has that been on that side of it? Yeah. So, hey, look, do you know what? And this is the thing. But I think, like I say, going back to, I think people are just now, quite a few people now scrutinising, going, well, who did that? Why did you not do this? You know, and bless them, they haven't got the answers. They're doing statements coming out late. And also, let's be fair, we've got this situation where we play a team coming down from Buckinghamshire on Saturday week, and it's just been turned into a free-for-all.
Oh, mate.
And that's just been put on them. They didn't know that. And they've got to work on that.
The Doms Trust board did not know that the game with Milton Keynes was not going to be as it has been every single time it's been played before, when fans have been in attendance as a bubble fixture. And it's happened three times we've been at home. We've hosted them with fans in attendance. And every time, you know, at King's Meadow, it's been coming. They've been had to come through the clandestine route and stuff like that. that's been eliminated completely for this one. And I think it ends badly. I think something, I don't know what can be done, but something's got to be changed in that, because I think that's on many levels a horrendous decision, not least because I don't really want anyone that supports that football club in Wimbledon Town Centre damaging it and bringing down the house prices, like millions of pounds, just by their mere presence. but I just think the opportunities for things to go wrong. I mean, not that I don't think we ever would, because we're not that sort of fan base, but it only takes, like, even their team coach, like, I don't know how that gets into the stadium.
I don't know how it gets in. I don't know how any team coach gets into the stadium at the moment with that tight gap. you see him coming out, and he's like, don't bring a coach, just bring a couple of minibuses next time.
Yeah, we'll just walk. Might be easy to get the train. Yeah. I was going to say many years ago when Fulham coach broke down, their players just had to walk to Selhurst Park and they played each other, played us. But that's another example of exactly that. That's why I said that's why the confusion reigns there with the Doms Trust board. As we said, they're not making day-to-day decisions, but in many scenarios, they are making statements or appearing to be doing such. And I think that delineation really needs to be clear. And I think if the PLC board are appointing people, then the PLC board are the ones that announce it. Do you know what I mean? It's a bit of a muddle. It is a bit of a muddle. I think many people are left confused. The Milton Keynes situation, that's absurd. That is absurd, isn't it? Like,
well, it is. You know, I sort of, like, in my head, I'm sort of thinking it's probably good in a way that we've got someone with no connection to it managing that game. Because I think it has put so much pressure on it, you know, in terms of, because there's a lot put on these games against Milton Keynes, and this is massive. Because let's be fair, right? Their fans can be coming down thinking we can relegate you, you know, or near enough put one of the nails in the coffin as such. It's not going to be a nice atmosphere. I worry about it. I do worry about it because, you know, we have got new fans. There's no doubt about that, because we've got double the attendance we have from King's Meadow. And I wouldn't put it past fans from other clubs who know it's now not a bubble game. It's not the same. I think before it used to be the same level as like a Celtic Rangers in terms of police. It used to be that sort of level. It's now gone down a level, a grade.
I'm sure there's a few, quite a smaller number of police at our fixture than Celtic Rangers are.
But it's putting that same category. Like, let's be fair, when we get a King's Meadow, we have more horses than fans sometimes, don't we? Like, the horses and, like, it is like some, like, Millwall were coming down from the 80s. Sort of side of it. So, you know, there's nothing saying that some fans will just come for the trouble. Because, hey, look, do you know what? Trouble, we have to say, the trouble has escalated. You know, there is trouble now around grounds. Can't deny that. So do you know what? The police would be begging for us to win, because then it would just be a handful of people who got to get to a train station. But I just think it's something we just didn't need. And like I say, whoever's got to deal with that, I can't see how you change it, because the police would have already got their allocation now already.
Tickets are already gone. Yeah, their fans have already got tickets in hand. So
yeah,
what can you do?
So the late notice of it, I think, you know, look, I don't know about you, but I'm getting in early. I'm staying late. I'm just not going to worry about all that, but
ever tell you the story on the podcast of the trainee teacher we had? I don't think I ever said it on the podcast.
Go on.
I think I've told you.
Did he cycle to games?
No. That's my head teacher that's got a season ticket now. My old head teacher has now got a season ticket. He's a West Ham fan. He's got a season ticket at Plough Lane. He cycles to and from. This is going back a few years now. But just to give you an indication of just being in the mere presence of someone that supports that team. Blooming trainee teacher in South London turns up. Oh, yeah, Milton Keynes fan. Oh, my. I won't even go into detail, Stu, but I've never had to bite my tongue and hold my fist back harder. Not even in the days of Liam Trotter, Stu. That enraged. Oh, my word. What are the odds of that ever happening? It was like once I was in Luton Town Centre and somebody walks past with an old Wimbledon FC top, but it was a Go MK logo on it. I was like, how does that happen?
Yeah, like, don't wear that.
Someone's deliberately trolling me with like some Matrix scenario where they're throwing things to wind me up.
But you know what? I'm sort of thinking, in my head, I'm looking at your logic that these runs can't last forever. So we can't stay on a 21 match.
No, of
we can't stay with point. We can't stay with not beating them at Plough Lane, or we haven't beaten them since Lyle Taylor, you know, hero. By the way, did I tell Lyle Taylor was on the radio with me?
I'm glad, because I was about to make this link, but I was going to do it in another way. But we've got there. You've beaten me to it. So do you want to? Because what Lyle Taylor said on the radio the other evening was fascinating and music to the ears of somebody like myself, who is a huge Neil Ardley fanboy.
Yeah, and Joe, I have to say thank you very much to Aaron Paul, because I was having a rubbish day on Monday, and he kindly knows that obviously Lyle is one of my favourite players, and kindly invited him.
One of your favourite? Come on, Stu. Stu, you're stood in front of a blue photo of him. Look, in a frame.
Joe, you know, I think the thing with Lyle is, you know, he scored. I think it was just a passion he showed. Do you know what I mean? And that sort of side of it. But again, we lost him for a free, didn't we? For a free transfer. How much would we have got if we'd had on a contract?
Oh, breaking news.
Oh, breaking news.
Someone's Lyle answered Taylor. Your question. Taylor. Would have been worth £5 billion.
I think, do you know what? He was very complimentary of Simon Vassey. He took it to a different direction than what I thought, but I totally agreed with what he said in terms of the scouting. We did a lot of scouting.
Didn't it back up the point of us talking about long-term plans? Because actually, when Neil left and Simon Vassey left, we were told that our scouting was all out of whack, our network was terrible, and Nick Dawes had to come in and sort of create a whole new big database that we'd never had before, and actually it seemed like we were actually pretty good in the first place.
And then in the end he then got the assistant manager's job and we didn't replace
there we go, you see. At any point have we really had any idea what we're doing over the past 4 years?
I think in our heads we've had an idea what we want to do, but it goes back, doesn't it? You know, like, in my head, I think a director of football, somebody... So I think I've said to you before, you know, look at Swansea. Swansea, years and years ago, put a director of football in. They decided how they were going to play, what players they needed to recruit. So whoever, if the head coach wasn't successful, or if they were headhunted and they went to somebody else, someone else would be recruited to adapt to that. And they've done that all the time. That means that actually is cost effective, because it means you're not changing all your players and stuff. And we've had that in our head to do, but we've never done it. And then we've gone on a case of sacking people. So if you look at, look at the team Neil Ardley had, and then what he wanted to have, totally different. Then to what Glyn wanted to have, totally different, because he brought in Woody and Ollie Palmer and all that sort of stuff. And then look at Robert. All got different styles. We need to have an identity. And I think that's going back to the Robert thing. I like the idea of us having an identity. And as much as we hate that team from Buckinghamshire, you watch their academy all the way through.
All the way through for years, we know what we're playing against.
You know, and yes, they're heavily funded, but you can't help but admire from a football point of view. Okay, I'm taking the emotion out of it, but that is a model that would be great for us. But we say it and we don't do it. And I think that's where we are. You know, if you look at Simon Bassey, George Frankham come to us on loan. Jake Reeves come to us on loan. Simon Bassey checked in with them all the time. Just in case they were released. And when they were released, they come straight to us because they had that relationship. He travelled. His football knowledge was great. And it's not so much about, but we just let these people go. But we haven't got hold of our recruitment. And in my opinion, there's no point keep appointing new people if you don't get your back. And the football committee hasn't worked. We didn't put enough money into it. And until you sort those problems out, doesn't matter how good a manager is that they come in. You know, we have to hope Mike Bowen is a miracle worker. He is actually a director of football. He has had that role at Reading, hasn't he?
Yeah.
So he might be a seeing of that side. But and the thing is, we've got so much to do. But how do you do it? We're in terms of numbers, if you look at how many people are employed by Wimbledon, very little.
Very few.
And we're asking them to do a job in a division that, well, look, we just, you know, we're looking off, a lot of clubs now are releasing their financial figures. Pompey, £7 million wage budget. And they're 10th.
Well, What was the, and bear with me, because it was some ridiculous sum, but I can't, Ipswich's spend on agents' fees was in the multi-millions.
Oh, was it? I know it was 4 million in total, wasn't it, for the division?
For the division, it was 4 million in total, but Ipswich, if I can get it up here, they accounted for, oh, I do apologise, I may have got excited. Theirs was the biggest in the division, so it's not multi-million, sorry, but £780,000.
Wow.
On agents' fees. And when the division, as you say, Stu, is 4 million, I mean, it's just, it's roughly under a quarter, it's about 20%. So yeah, in fact, 20% of that is on one football club. And as you say, Portsmouth, seven million.
And if you match it up, right, we played Pompey three times this season, beat them 5-3 in the Pizza Trophy.
Doesn't count.
We got beat by a late goal at Fratton Park.
Yeah.
And we drew 0-0 at home. Mm-hmm. And our budget is four times less than theirs. So actually, we've been successful. If you want to put, you know, they were 10th in the league and they're spending that amount of money. If we're spending 7 million quid and we're not performing, no manager survives.
Yeah.
But, and this is where we are. Pompey are not a strong division. Now, you know, like years ago, Pompey come to town, oh, big club. Now Pompey, if I'm being honest with you, they're probably middle of the road in terms of club structure. You know, you've got your Sheffield Wednesday in our league, Ipswich, and that sort of side of it.
Yeah.
And I just think, you know, we just have to be realistic. We are not. We've got to be smarter. You know, we could get £1 million for Rudy in the summer, easily. A Sal now, I think you could easily get £1 million for him, easily, especially now that he's been in, you know, involved in England under-20s.
Yeah, he was
a great achievement.
And I'm just going to say this, people. He was called up to the England under-20s. Some people have said no, he wasn't called up.
He was. Can't go into the details, but he was called up.
Yes.
And to add that, he was in the programme for the England-Germany game.
Which Germany is your game. Evidence.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even though that programme got the season wrong, but he kept us up.
Oh, yeah, we stayed up.
We already know. There's no point going to any more games, people. You know what happens. Spoiler alert. The England programme told you Ayo Bissell kept us up in the division 21-22.
But what? But you know what? What an achievement! He couldn't even get into the Billericay team. He went on loan to Billericay.
Billericay.
I know. He was recalled, and he come on against Shrewsbury. And if you look at, you know, people say he was too small, and they did. I did. Oh, hand on heart, say there's no way he can play football. I did it and proved totally wrong, and glad I was proved wrong. But he's just got an England under-20 call up. How mad is that? And he's probably put a lot of value onto him. Which is what, you know, realistically, that's what it is about. Ayo is not going to be here for 3 or 4 years. We need to get him in, sell him. And we've got a couple coming through. But we may not go down that route. We just don't know what the strategy is now.
Well, we shall look and see what happens over the next week. Sheffield Wednesday away. We won the last time we went to Hillsborough, Stu, back in 2002.
Yeah, last time I went there was in the Cup semi.
Was that the last quarterfinal?
Holdsworth scored late on.
2-0.
Probably hasn't changed much since then either. It's mad, isn't it? Sheffield Wednesday in League One.
Well, they were in League One for many years, weren't they? But and they seem to. But you always think that a team of that size, when it comes down, shouldn't then return to the third tier, but because I mean, lots of clubs have done it down the years, as we know. Like Leicester, many years ago, fell down into this division. Club Luton went all the way down to the
and
they don't want to go back down.
And you know what's very interesting? I was listening to Price of Football. I didn't actually realise that they don't own their stadium anymore. They pay £2.5 million
season. Oh yeah, no, I didn't know this actually.
£2.5 million.
It's been that way for a little while now, hasn't it?
Yeah,
to the owner.
These clubs that don't own their stadium. It's crazy, isn't it? And but yeah, big game. And also, we did look last time Mark Bowen took a team to Hillsborough, they won 3-0.
Well, there you go. That an omen? Wimbledon won a football match with last year.
We were a lot younger.
Oh dear. All right. Yeah, I was only 27 at the time. Right. Anyway, I think we probably. Do you want to offer a scoreline prediction for Sheffield Wednesday?
I think it'd be a closer game than what it would have been if this, we were talking about this a week ago. I wouldn't be surprised to see us come away with a draw. Then go for a 1-1.
You're very optimistic. I still think we have got a defeat coming, but I will think we'll get a more positive result against Charlton on Tuesday evening. But
Do you know
we shall
what, for the
see.
Charlton game, what I will say, that atmosphere at the Charlton game will be electric. There is,
Reminiscent of when we played them midweek many years
yeah,
ago.
and I know you're, there will be a buzz for the fan, for the fan base, there will be a buzz, new face, all that sort of stuff. It will be, if we get a result, if we can get something at Sheffield Wednesday. But I think the Charlton game will be, the atmosphere will be, hey, look, midweek under the lights at Plough Lane. Hey, look, let's just, we've got to use our home advantage. We haven't used it much this season.
No, we also look forward to Mick Buckley's update in the Charlton programme on Tuesday. One bugbear of mine this season has been the absence of programme notes from
I
the
knew you were
manager.
going there.
Oh my good God. I mean, with all due respect, where was the week we had the nutritionist? I mean, come, for the love of God. Like, you've got to.
It's been Nick's bugbear, and I've been winding him up by telling him who's.
Who's doing the notes this week? Do you know what? I just think, especially when we've been struggling, you stop a manager from doing program notes, and it looks like he's been hidden away, and I don't think that's a good look. But anyway, it's all by the by now. I'm sure, Stu, we will at some point talk a lot more about Robbo and what he did for the football
Yeah.
club and what he's done over the past 18 years. But I mean, I don't think it's unfair for us to finish this week's podcast by saying an absolute massive thank you. 18 years is a hell of a long time to be at one place of work, and I think anyone that wants to deny the work that Mark did with the academy and in then keeping us up last season, I think they're living in cloud cuckoo land. And I think he's somebody that is a huge loss to the football club in whatever role we might have been able to find him if it wasn't going to be continue to be head coach. And I'll tell you another thing actually. When I reflect on sort of my reaction to events this week and what happened and some of the things I've said, Mark's a much better man than I am because he's handled himself with absolute class and dignity, and his statement on the official website on Thursday was a testament to that. And yeah, I'm gutted he's gone.
Yeah, and do you know what? Hey, look, for whatever his achievements as coach, academy, he's done a whole lot through the 18 years. He also wanted to make people better people, always be the best version of yourself. And one thing I would always say is that he always held himself well, respectful, was in the bar many a times, wasn't frightened to face people. And if any player that's come through the academy, they are just generally decent people. That's what. And in a day and age when we have footballers who sometimes don't really understand what football is all about, or even how to pay a bill, I think the life skills that he gives them, they are always very thankful. So, yeah, do you know what? I think he'd be a great ambassador. We have ambassadors for clubs. I think he'd be a great ambassador for us. But hey, look, I hope he's back in some capacity. He loves Wimbledon. He will be hurting, but that's because he's a very proud man. And he believes he can get us out. He believes he can get me out of trouble, and he may well have. We'll never know, but he's gonna be missed. He's gonna be missed heavily around that training ground. I've been down there many times, and he's a life and soul of that place. He talks to everybody. He knows everybody. So, big loss, but we move on. We're a football club. We move on, and hopefully, Mark Bowen and Eddie Alphabet. I don't. I'm not going to pronounce his bloody name. Can get us out of trouble this season because we need to do it quickly.
Nidzwiecki.
Yeah, Eddie. Eddie, Eddie, Eddie.
On that note, everyone, thanks for listening. We shall be back next week. I will do the usual sign off, which everybody loves this part. Alexa Bliss, bag first, milk last. 2 plus 2 equals 4, and we shall speak to you again next week.